Psalm 19 talks about the handiwork, the creation of God, and how they display God's glory. And how even the days and the nights and the creation that God created, it speaks of who God is. Someone who does not have the written word of God has the creation that God created, that he spoke into existence, and he can see something about a higher power than himself. He knows that there's something beyond him because he can't create like creation is. Would you turn to Psalm chapter 90? Psalm chapter 90. Don't really have time to develop this thought, but God's character is woven in, it's intrinsic in what he has created. We can see his character reflected in his creation. Psalm 90, look in verse 16. This is a prayer of Moses, the man of God. He wrote in verse 16, "Let thy work appear unto thy servants, and thy glory unto their children. And let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish thou the work of our hands upon us. Yea, the work of our hands, establish thou it." This verse, these two verses, they speak of God's laying a foundation for us to work. He says, establish the work of our hands. The foundation of anything we do is really based on who God is. Tonight we're going to talk about music, and we're going to see that music, well, a few weeks ago we saw that music is a gift from God. I need to catch Pastor up to speed. So a little review. Music is a gift from God. It's a good and perfect gift. Came down from God. Why did God give music? Well, for many reasons, including these. Enjoyment. So what do you enjoy through your music? For instruction, music has great power to teach. What do you teach through your music? Who do you teach through your music? We find several times in the New Testament we are to speak in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs one to another, singing in our hearts with grace to the Lord. How do you teach through your music? Well, it should be with grace. And then where do you teach in your music? Well, we were doing that a little bit of that a few minutes ago. We were singing congregational songs together. Anna came and sang a song, "Come Thou Fount." And we were hearing truths of God put to music, and we were being instructed and reminded of those truths as we were singing, as we were hearing them sung. Music is for instruction. Music is for expression. It's a way to express our feelings. What do you express through your music? The music you listen to, the music you create. What do you express through it? Worship, the fourth reason. Religions all over the world use music to worship false gods. God's people have used music all through the centuries to worship the true God. You know what, when you count up all the mentions of music in the Bible, by far, the vast majority are in reference to worship of God. Temple worship, the Psalms, so many of the references of music deal directly with worshiping God. So who do you worship in your music? The star singing? Yourself? An idol that's being sung about? Or God? Who do you worship? As a gift from God, we should treasure music. We should enjoy it. We should use it for its proper end. And as we do, we will reap the benefits God has put into music. Music is great. Last week, we looked at Satan's devices for music. How would the devil pervert God's good gift so that way it serves him rather than God? How would Satan pervert music so that way we turn our attention off of God and onto ourselves, onto other things? I propose that Satan would pervert the proper presentation of music, how music is given, how it's sung. When our presentation is not drawing attention to God, we're missing the mark. What is your presentation of your music? What you listen to, how are they presenting it? What you sing, how are you presenting it? But Satan goes beyond the presentation. He also strives to pervert the proper words of music. And we don't really need to take time to prove that. We did last week. Take almost any secular song that's popular today, and there's words in it that just are not true, are not wholesome. And Satan has done his job well, perverting the proper words of music. In Scripture, Certainly, there's an emphasis on the lyrics of music. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom. The word of Christ, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. There's three texts that are mentioned in Colossians 3:16. We have psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Certainly, there's an emphasis on the words of music. But Satan's music is all wrong. The focus of the words are all wrong. The words are all wrong. The songs establish a new normal for the next generation of what is to be expected in life. So what do you say? What do you sing through your music? What do you hear sung through your music? Are the words fitting? Are they proper? Are they acceptable to the Lord? I don't believe that Satan rests satisfied with just messing with the words of music, though. His goal, to be like God, to receive worship, to undermine and deface all that God does, I don't believe he's satisfied just to change some words and call it good. We'll call it bad. And Satan's not alone in this quest. Like Satan, we, mankind, we have turned ourselves into little gods to worship ourselves and to worship things that we make. And so, like Satan, we are also messing with music. Man is messing with music. We want to recreate life according to our likes and our dislikes. No, I don't believe Satan is actively indwelling every songwriter that puts out wrong music. He would be a very busy devil. Now, there are musicians that say that have gone to Satanists and they have tried to channel the devil, they've tried to channel demons to write bad music. There are musicians who have done that. But there's enough evil lurking in the hearts of man to write whole symphonies of wicked music. So I say Satan throughout, but it's also man, us, we have reappropriated music to serve our own diabolical end. We can do pretty well without Satan's active involvement. So in what other areas of music can we go wrong? We have presentation. Last week we talked about presentation and lyrics, the words. But I believe Satan messes and perverts the proper elements of music. Now, let's break down. I don't mean for this to be a theory lesson, although perhaps you'll hear a word or two that you haven't heard in a while or ever. So the proper elements of music. We're talking about the building blocks, the things that make up music. We're talking about melody, the tune, harmony, those are the other notes played together with the tune, and rhythm. That's the arrangement of the melody and the harmony according to time, how long the notes are and how fast and different things. So we have these three building blocks, melody, harmony, and rhythm. The question for us tonight is, what does your music say? And we're leaving off words tonight. We're going to dissect music a little bit into these three parts, but understand there will be some bleed over between these. I might mention one thing in harmony that also fits in rhythm, and there's going to be a little bleed over between the two, between the three. Three elements of music. The first one, let's talk about melody. Let's talk about melody. It's the part of the song that we hum or sing. In some respects, it's hard to pin down what makes a great melody. You look in our hymnal and there's dozens and dozens of favorite songs, and we could sing the melody to every one of them in the shower tomorrow morning. How do we remember these great melodies? And they're all different. They're not all just you type a program into your computer and you hit go and it spits out a melody that's good. You hit go again, it spits out a different melody that's also great. You hit go again, computers just don't have it. You can get a decent melody out of a computer program. You can get one that follows certain rules and you'll get a decent melody. You just kind of know it when you hear it. That's a melody that I can remember, one that you can latch on to. Let me give you a few characteristics of good, singable melodies that have endured the test of time. And these are characteristics that songwriters, that music theory teachers, secular folks, they have said, here are some things that make for a great melody. First, you're going to have a strong sense of the home tone. The home tone. The word would be tonic, the key of the song. I'm going to sing a short phrase of a song, and then I would like you to sing the home note, the tonic. Da 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 da. Would you sing the tonic? Dum, that's it. It starts not on the tonic. You know, not every song starts on the tonic. Here, let's go a little farther. Da 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 da. Good. You can find a tonic if you look at the last note in the hymnal. The last note is generally on the tonic. There's a few exceptions. But generally, there's the tonic. If you don't know where that is, you're kind of lost. And there's music. Yeah, Brother Bunn, there's music that is written purposefully to make you feel lost, wandering. You can listen to me and you're like, where is that no? Where is that no? Where is the no? Where is the no? And just a moment ago, some of you sang dum, and some of you sang dun. And I didn't hear any other notes in there. So you were either on one of the main chords of that key, or you're on the tonic of that key. You were right. You were all over home base on that, even though you were wrong. All right? You were very close. None of you saying, you had an idea where home was. And a melody that is a great melody is going to have a strong sense of where home is. Secondly, there's a balance between steps and leaps. Da-da-dee-da. They're next-door neighbors, right? Da-da-dee-da-da-da. You hear those leaps and those steps? You can't remember a song if it's all leaps. If it's just all over the place, our minds just can't grab a good hold of it and hold on to it. One exception I thought of to this was, oh, say, can you see? That's all leaps up to that point. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's, then we have a few steps. By the dawn's early light. There's a lot of leaps, and isn't that song hard to sing? When we sing it's by dawn's early light. You know, we're trying to get the right note, and the leaps are hard. And so a songwriter knows we're going to have some leaps in there for interest, because it's interesting when you jump up to a note or when you duck down to a note. But then you got to stay there for a little bit before you jump around again. So there's another characteristic. Third, most good melodies have repeating elements, certain intervals, that's distance between pitches, certain rhythms, certain musical shapes that you recognize. I've heard that before. And it's kind of a repeat. Fourth, a balance between phrases. Generally, you're not going to have a song that has a two-measure phrase, and then a four-measure phrase, and then a two-and-a-half-measure phrase, and then a one-measure phrase. It's gonna have one-time signature at the beginning all the way through. Perhaps you'll have a switch here or there for some variety. But you're not going to be constantly switching back and forth and adding extra beats in. Why? Because we are rhythmic creatures, and we are used to rhythm. So a song that's going to work is one that has balance between phrases. Most good melodies, and this is last, number five, most good melodies have a climactic point, something it moves towards. And then as it comes away from it, the song doesn't end. Happy birthday to you, da-da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da-dee-da, da-da-da-da-da-da. Wouldn't it be horrible if you didn't have that last phrase? So you can't just have a mountain peak and then a cliff. No, the mountain peak comes down the other side, and it rests. It comes down to what we call a cadence, where it feels like the music's moving somewhere, and then it rests. Rest is important in music. Later on, we'll talk about tension and release, or consonance and dissonance. We'll talk about that a little more under harmony, but rest is an important thing. If you don't ever have it, you're really working yourself up into a frenzy. Would you take your hymnal, number 570? Number 570. I would like to play this melody for you. Here's a repeated section. Did you notice that? So our first line and our second line, there's a repetition there. Have you noticed any leaps? Or are they all steps? We're all steps right now. We're about to get to a leap. Could you sing Home for me? Always go with Josiah, all right? Do you feel that? Do you hear that? It's not, and it's not, and it's certainly not. Okay? You kind of know where it's at. Let's go on. So, leave to thy God. Here we have a second section. You could call it the B section. Here's some leaps. And we're back to steps in another section. This could be section C. And then we're back to section B again. Complete repetition of what we heard earlier. And then a modified C section. Where's home? Wouldn't you be so dissatisfied if we did that and walked away? Why? This is our cadence. This is where rest happens. There's tension here and it resolves. Do you hear that? It's like you're breathing in. Did any of you sigh on that? That's the feeling of it. That's normal. That's part of music. There are exceptions, but generally when a musician or when a melody falls outside of these characteristics, it's not going to work well, it's hard to sing, it's not going to stick in your mind, and it's not going to last. It's like a drawing that your two-year-old drew for you. Except for the composer and his mom or dad, it means nothing to anyone else. Great melodies, and this is secular, this is not Christian authors and composers. This is, the world recognizes a good tune is going to have those things. So how would or could Satan pervert melody? And I thought about this at length, because it just seems like, well, melody is just, they're just notes in line, and there's not a whole lot you can do with that. We're not even talking about the rhythm yet or the harmony. Well, Satan could take melody, which is the premier element of music, and he could say, that's not important. Let's make rhythm the most featured item, or let's make harmony the most featured item of music. So Satan could displace melody as that premier element. Several Christian authors have connected the three parts of man, the soul, the spirit, and the body, with the three parts of music. This being the spirit of man making the melody. And you can find this connection in the Bible. Ephesians 5 talks about, be not drunk with wine wherein is excess, but be filled with the spirit, and then you're speaking and singing yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. It's the spirit that is bringing out, making melody to the Lord out of your heart. So the spirit of man communicating with God being the melody of music. Now the soul, sometimes called the heart in the Bible, the seat of where your emotions sit, is influenced chiefly by harmony. Harmony changes how you feel about things. You ever hear a song in minor? Da da dee da da. Da da dee da, sad birthday to you. You're 102. No, if you're 102, happy birthday to you. Doesn't that change how you feel about the song, though? We're talking harmony. We're getting into that area. The body, chiefly influenced by rhythm, and we're going to get into those in just a moment. In other areas of life, when we choose to prioritize our body or our soul over our spirit, we're choosing evil. The spirit says, that's enough cookies. And the body says, I want more. Gluttony. I mean, cannot that be the sin of the flesh? What about bitterness or anger? A sin of the spirit or the soul? We're going after those things. music that's going to emphasize harmony or rhythm to the displacement of melody is going to mess with the order. And if the balance, if the order's not right, the music's going to be wrong. Now here's a few musical styles that I'm sweeping with a broad brush here, but here's some musical styles to emphasize harmony over the melody. Blues music, jazz music, new age music. Here are some music styles that emphasize rhythm over the melody, getting it out of order. Hip-hop or rap. Rap is kind of a subset of hip-hop. I learned that this week. Rock music, metal music. I thought metal was part of rock, but it's apparently a big enough thing by itself. Reggae, rhythm and blues. I mean, right in the name of it. Rhythm. And then blues. Blues referring to the harmony. There's a certain sound that blues music has. So here are some musical styles that emphasize harmony over the melody or rhythm over the melody. And you find quotes on the internet written by people who have so much right doctrinally, and they say the styles don't really matter. And they use metal as the example. You can listen to a Christian metal band, and the style doesn't really matter. Now, if they're doing things that are inappropriate, and then it is bad. But if the words are fine, the style's okay. I believe there's a case to be made that it's not okay, because we're turning music upside down. And you turn anything God made upside down, yeah, you're in league with Satan. Secondly, let's go to harmony. We all have to move along here. Harmony, the combination of notes to form chords. Last week I read a quote by the great Christian Aristotle. That's better. Last week you just took it hook, line, and sinker. No, he's a Greek philosopher. He had some insight on life, and he talked a lot about life because he was a philosopher. But he, a secular Greek from several thousand years ago, says, emotions of any kind are produced by melody and rhythm. Therefore, by music, a man has become accustomed to feeling the right emotions. Music thus has power to form character, and the various kinds of music, based on the various modes, may be distinguished by their effects on character. One, for example, working in the directory of melancholy. One, encouraging abandonment. Another, self-control. Another, enthusiasm. And so on through the series. You know, Satan would love to influence us through our emotions. Satan would love to put something into our life that makes us feel a certain way so that way we act, because a lot of us, unfortunately, we act according to our emotions, not according to what we know is right and wrong. Plato said this about music. Musical training is a more potent instrument than any other because harmony and rhythm find their way into the inward places of the soul. Satan would love to get a foothold into your soul. And here are two Greeks from thousands of years ago that said music, harmony, melody, rhythm, they work into our hearts, they work into our emotions, they work into our soul. We better be careful what we're letting influence us. Music influences our emotions. A professional conductor and composer, Michael Tilson Thomas, said this, music can express emotions even beyond the capability of words. Now, words can express a whole lot, but here's a professional musician who says that music goes beyond words even. I'm talking about expressing emotions. Someone else said this quote, music makes you feel feelings. Lyrics make you think thoughts. So music can make you feel thoughts. And you take words and music and you put them together. You have the music that brings in the feeling and the lyrics that bring in thoughts, and music can make you feel thoughts. Now, doesn't Satan have a few thoughts he would like you to feel and to think? If you don't think music will influence your emotions, no, never mind. Let's move on. God displays emotions. Emotions are not a bad thing. Intrinsically, emotions are not sinful. God displays them. The children of Israel grieved him in the wilderness. God shows his wrath against the wickedness of man. God rejoices in doing good for his people. Jeremiah 32:41. Shortest verse in the Bible, John 11:35. Jesus wept. God displays emotions. But God never sins when he expresses his emotion. Jesus was angry at the businessmen in the temple. He didn't just vaporize them. He threw over some tables. And he had to come back and do it a second time in his ministry. He never went to excess. God loves his people with an everlasting love. But never will you find God's emotions in the driver's seat. Even though God does display his emotions. God created us in his image. He created us to have emotions. Romans 12:15 is not just a hypocrisy when he says, rejoice with them who do rejoice. You can feel joy with someone who is feeling joy and rejoice with them. And you can weep and grieve with those who weep. Don't you have satisfaction when you're done mowing your yard? Until you think that you got to do it again next week. Victory at the ball game. Or defeat. Sorrow at the death of a loved one. Love of a husband towards his wife. Emotions are a valid, God-created part of us. But God does command us not to let emotions to rule. Be ye angry and sin not. Philippians 4:6, be careful for nothing. Don't be anxious, but in everything by prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known unto God. Satan and our flesh would be happy to allow emotion to lead. But when we just do what we feel like doing, we're going to destroy our world. We've all felt things that, thankfully, we have not acted on. And that's saved a lot of destruction. And then there's a few things that we have acted on when we felt like doing something, saying something, and it has wrought destruction. Harmony speaks to your emotions. Who do you want speaking to your emotions, or what do you want speaking to your emotions? When you're angry, who's the last person you need? Somebody to pump up your anger more. Take it out on them. That's not what you need. When you're depressed, do you need someone whispering in your ear, life is futile? Just give it up. Life is but a dream. When you're bitter, do you need somebody telling you how you are entitled to feel slighted and they deserve every mean look that you give them, every cold shoulder interaction? You don't need that. Are those the way God would have his children handle their emotions? No. No. Try this experiment. Put on Mozart's A Little Night Music. It's about 15, 20 minutes long. And listen to the whole thing. You can be sitting in your easy chair, just don't fall asleep. You can be cleaning your house, but just put it on and make sure that you can hear it good and loud. And then evaluate your emotions afterwards. Now take into effect the phone calls that you get during that time and whatever else is going on. But evaluate your emotions after that. And then, and I say this facetiously, listen to 15 to 20 minutes of Black Sabbath or Pink Floyd or some other band that's playing rock, and then evaluate your emotions. I would venture if you did that. I've never conducted this experiment myself. I have listened to Mozart. But sit down and really just stop and give it a minute to think. What? How am I feeling? What is this music doing to my emotions? Harmony affects emotions. Did you know harmony has rules? You can't just play any old chord and have it sound good. You ever get a not an A on your assignment, Josiah, because the teacher didn't like the chord that you put? No? Okay. Like I said, stick with Josiah here. During the last 400 years, man has gradually discovered, and really they've systematized, music theory rules that guide how harmony should be. Trained composers know what they're doing when they're picking certain chords and chord progressions. Now you say, well, my grandma didn't go to school, but she sings great. You know, she writes music and folk musicians naturally follow these rules. They do. Whether they know them as rules or that's just the right note. That's what fits there. These rules give direction to a song. You can know a phrase in a song is coming to an end because of a cadence. You know that there's a rest coming because, I don't mean musical rest, but there's release, there's satisfaction at the end of a song because there's a cadence there. You know, you hear notes that don't seem to fit, and you know they're not mistakes, but then you hear how they resolve, and you expect them to resolve. And when they don't resolve, you get mad and ask for your money back. Why? Because they're supposed to resolve. You hear a chord that doesn't properly lead to the next chord, and you say, well, that didn't sound right. And they do it again. That didn't sound right again. So it's not a mistake. There's something not quite right here. Well, there's music theory, and we're not going through music theory rules tonight. You can study that at length. 12 years in college. You can study at length music theory and see how people have just noticed what's in creation and they've systematized it to what seems to work. Look back at Be Still My Soul, would you? Let's look at the harmony for a moment. We played the melody earlier. Like the first half or the second half better? Why? Because, you know, maybe you can't, Josiah could explain every bit of it, even the mistake I had in there. But you don't know why, but you know it doesn't work. That's part of harmony. Harmony has rules. You might say, where did all these rules come from? And if man made them up, are these rules infallible, or are they just kind of guidelines and we can take them or leave them and change them as we like? Start with the scale. Where do we get the scale? Where do we get that scale? Go study something called overtones. So if you take a string that is 10 feet long and you pluck it, maybe it's going to sound something like this. Now this string in here is not 10 feet long. It's about 3.5 feet. It might sound something like this. Cut the string in half, and now it's 5 feet long, and it's going to sound like this. You hear how that's the same note? Those are both C's on the piano, musical C. You hear how that's the same, even though one is higher and one is lower? It's still the same. It's the same thing, right? They work together. That's called an octave. So we're an octave apart. Let's cut that 10-foot string. Let's cut it into a 3.33-foot length. And then we're going to have this note. There's our G in the scale. So here we have. Then we're going to cut a 2.5-foot string, and we're going to have this. Then a 2-foot string. And a 1.66-foot string. No, I'm sorry. I'm missing a couple in here. There's our 2-foot string. Here's our 1.66 string. There's an octave of the 3.33 string. Does that make sense? Throwing a lot of numbers at you. Here's our next string. That's 1.43 feet long. And then 1.25 feet, 1.11 feet, and a 1-foot string. Do you hear how all that sounds really nice? Until we get to the end, then it starts kind of fuzzy. This sounds like a chord, doesn't it? That's where we get our triad. Here's our C major triad. We have discovered, man has discovered, God put it in music. Take a string, you cut it in half. It's math, y'all. You cut it in half, it goes up an octave. You cut the whole string into thirds. You cut it into fourths, you cut it into fifths, you cut it into sixths, you cut it into sevenths. There's our 10-foot string cut into seven equal pieces, and that's the note you get. So what musicians did is they just put all those notes and they made a scale. So it's based on what is actually in nature that God created. Now man tuned it a little bit. You can look up tuning. But that's where we get our scale. That's where we get... Do you have to do anything to that chord to make it sound more stable? Or can it just sit there? It can kind of just sit there. How about this? It feels like it needs to go somewhere, right? There's a little tension in it, and so you're going to resolve it. Ah. And then you're going to go... Brother Thompson says, we can't stop there because we got to go here. So there's tension and there's release. Why does that cadence sound good? Well, because there's a lot of shared. If you have this string with all the overtones, then you take this string with all the overtones, they share a lot of the same frequencies. And because they share a lot of the same, they're not contradicting with each other very much. And because they share a lot of the same frequencies, there's agreement. There's agreement between this. That's our 1-5 chord, by the way. Most common chords in the book. They agree very much with each other. They're very close to each other. A lot closer than this. They're like fighting each other there. Not as much. Probably heard Appalachian Spring based on that. But there's just a lot of dissonance. A lot of, that doesn't sit right. So, why does this sound good? Well, because the overtones align well. They work together rather than working against each other. Why does this chord sound bad? Well, because there's no agreement between the notes, between the overtones. So you gotta, so harmony. That's where we get our scale, we get our triads, we get our chords out of that, we get our cadences out of that. You got to have a cadence in music. If you don't have something that tells you you're coming to the end, you don't know you're going to stop the song. Look at Be Still My Soul. Here's a cadence. And we're home, right? There's another cadence. You knew it was going to stop because you heard it coming in the harmony. What's happening now? Something different. Oh, we're way away from home, aren't we? We'll get back. Now, Josiah. Where is home? No. None of these notes are that note. But harmony says we're going to get back there. So let's take that phrase again. In every change. We didn't stay home very long, did we? In that? What happens when you don't resolve tension? It's a strain that you need to resolve. Now, rhythm can create tension too, and there's a lot of things that can create tension in music. But what happens if you add more and more notes to your basic triad? You're adding more tension. Little 9 chord. How about we make it an 11 chord? Or a 13 chord? You hear how that fuzzies up the home? And you hear fighting in the notes that are playing together? or is it clear? All right, harmony creates tension. I remember sitting in the dentist office listening to jazz, going up the elevator, listening to elevator music, or the worst, when you call someone and they have that pesky music that never goes anywhere. There's no story in it. It just noodles around and noodles around, and then it stops for half a second and you think somebody's picking up and it starts again. And it just noodles around and it doesn't ever go anywhere. They're perpetually just drifting around. Harmony can either progress strongly or it can progress weakly. And I have a theory book at home that kind of lists out, kind of in order, this is the strongest of all cadences. And then there's weaker cadences. And then there's other things. And then there's just plain old not cadences, okay? What happens if you take too much tension in your life, you have too much tension in your life, and you just don't ever rest? You never take a vacation. Something's going to break down. And music that is constantly piling on tension is not good for you. Music that never comes home properly. Music that does not relax, does not cadence in the right way, is not helping you. It messes with your emotions. And I don't understand all the ways. I am still a student of this. But I know that it does. When you don't have that feeling of, and the song's over, that satisfaction, when it kind of noodles around and then it just kind of ends. Go listen to Charles Ives, Central Park in the Dark. And he tried to paint a sound picture of what Central Park, New York City, sounds like in the dark. And it's cacophony, just like Central Park is. It's horns and it's bells and it's just crazy. And you don't have harmony that, I didn't listen to the whole piece, so I can't say never. But the part, there was no harmony that ever went anywhere. There's no relief. We have to move on. Harmony messes with your emotions, and I know Satan would love to do that. And I believe Satan will use music, and man will use music to mess with our emotions. And he'll use harmony in music to do it. Here's the takeaway. Almost all pop music of today violates rules of harmony. A strong sense of home. Leaps and steps. Tension and release. There's a lot of pop music. I think right now we've done a good job as Christians talking about the rock and roll beat and rhythm. That's my shortest section. I think Christians have really gone and done their homework and said, hey, the beat of music is not good for us to listen to. But I think the part we're lacking most is harmony, where we're not getting rest. We're not having that tension and that release. And I think that's the biggest gap right now. Almost all pop music violates these rules of harmony. Let me give you a list of words and tell me, do they describe God or the world? 5 words. Tension, weak, unreliable, mystic, unstable. I'll give you another list of 5. Resolve, strength, reliable, reality, and stable. Would that not describe God in contrast to the world? There are Christian composers in our circles today who write with weak progressions of harmony. And really, the resulting music doesn't have the stability or the strength or the release that music should have. And it's reflecting music of the world, not music of God. New Age music, this is a quote off of an article on New Age music. Their artists try to create a state of almost trance-like relaxation or mindfulness in the listener rather than focusing on chord progressions or patterns. So even in harmony, they realize if you do away with chord progressions, you can kind of start using that music for getting people into almost trances. And other religions of the world do this. They say, no, we don't need, we're not going to use chord progressions because that tells a story that goes somewhere. There's something that to be told in that music. We're just going to kind of float around and have a mystic sound. We have Christian composers who are copying that in their music, and we're buying it, and we're singing it, and playing it, and let's make sure our music is following what people have. This is what God has plugged into music. When the rules of harmony are violated, you're making music that's not going to speak helpfully to your emotions. You might say, well, I don't understand it. I just like this sound. Well, let's take that out of music and let's talk about food. Tell that to a nutritionist. I don't know whether it's good for me or not, but I'm going to eat these Twinkies and this hot dog. You know, I like it. What is the nutritionist going to say? What's bad for you? How do you know? I went to school for it. Well, that doesn't mean any. I mean, that's just a paper on the wall. I can do my study on Google. Well, we trust nutritionists. We trust doctors. We trust lawyers. Perhaps you need to find and lean on an expert in music to say, hey, does this follow the rules of harmony? Or am I just enjoying what I like to hear? Maybe you don't understand it. Also, find someone who does and say, what do you think about this? If we get into the realm of, well, I like this and I like that and I don't really care for this, and if we get in the realm of preferences, there's no reason to even have a talk because we're all different. But somewhere there's a line that says, that's not good for me. I don't understand why it's not. How can pork and salt and sodium and dextrose, how can that be bad for me? But someone said, no, that is bad for you. Okay, I'm going to have to trust you. We got to move to rhythm, and we'll be done. Rhythm, the time element of music. Rhythm influences the body. You know, music has to happen in time. Everything we do really happens in time. And music is no different. Marches. You have a pattern of four. One, two, three, four. One. Do this long enough, you're going to start tapping your toe. All right, waltzes. Da, 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 dun, 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 dun. The Blue Danube Waltz. Dun, one, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three, one. Many authors have warned the dangers of the rock beat. It's a well-studied area of music. I'll give you two quotes about rock music. Tim Fisher says this: rhythm is the most distinguishing feature of rock music. If melody is supposed to be premier, but now rhythm is, we have a problem with rock music just off the get-go. I would add almost every other form of pop music capitalizes on rhythm. If you look at it and you listen to it, reggae, rhythm, and blues, jazz is just, that's the harmony animal. Rap, hip-hop, they all have rhythm driving, and rhythm is front and center, even if the drums are off on the back. That's what you hear. William Kirkpatrick, he's a professor at Boston College, he said this about taking Christian words and putting them with rock music. He says this: no matter what the words might say, the music speaks the language of self-gratification. Shall we sing, "Oh, how I love Jesus," to rock music? He goes on, he says, rock can't be made respectable. It doesn't want to be respectable. Respectable rock is a contradiction in terms. Well, it is possible to set a hymn or a song about undying love to the beat of rock. It cannot be done convincingly because the music will only subvert the words. And that's what, by and large, Christians are doing all over our country. They're taking music that says something different, and they're putting words on top like a veneer and saying, this is okay in church. This is okay to listen to at home. Now, God created rhythm. Genesis 8, chapter 22 says nothing about music, but it talks all about rhythm. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. There's a rhythm. The sun gets up, the sun goes down, the sun gets up, the sun goes down. It doesn't. The waves on the seashore are in a rhythm. Your heartbeat, hopefully, is rhythmic, not arrhythmic. Your breathing is generally on a rhythmic cycle. Our brains are wired to move in response to rhythm. That's why you hear a march, you start tapping your toe. That's why you start listening to rock music and you start beating your head back and forth. Because our brains are wired to, when they hear a rhythmic beat, they say, let's move. Let's look at Be Still My Soul. Listen to the rhythm of it, or maybe look at it. It says 4-4 at the beginning. Right before the notes start, it says 4-4. We have four beats in a measure, and it's going to sound like this. Now, the first beat is missing. You'll find it at the end of the song. That's where they put it. So it's going to start with the first beat missing. 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4-1. Now, in any good piece of music, the emphasis of the beat is going to be on beat one. In a waltz. Try putting the emphasis elsewhere. Okay. What happens? Do this with me. I'm going to play, I'm not going to clap. I'm going to play Be Still My Soul, and I would like you to clap on beat one and on beat three. Give a good hearty clap on beat one and a softer clap on beat three. So I'll give you the first three notes and then we're on the one. So 1, 2, 3, 4. How do you feel right now? Notice how you felt. Okay, now let's clap on beats 2 and 4. All right, we're taking a rock beat now. We're going to take the backbeat. Would you do that? And notice how you feel as you're clapping. I'll give you the first little bit and then coming on beat 2 of the second measure. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. Notice how you feel. Okay. How did you feel? This is what I felt when I did this. When I was clapping on 1 and 3, I just felt pretty stable. You know, I'm just sitting in my chair. As soon as I started clapping on 2 and 4, I started feeling this. Did you feel that? Did anyone else feel that? Did you nod or? Okay. We just noticed rhythm affects your body. Where you put the beat. That's called a backbeat. You're taking the emphasis off of 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, and you're putting it somewhere else. You're putting it on 2 and 4. And when you're doing that, you're kind of turning things upside down. There's a lot of quotes about rock and roll. Time magazine, October 31st, that's Halloween, 1969. Here's the quote. Rock and roll has, by its very beat and sound, always celebrated sensuality. It's just part of it. There are dozens and dozens of quotes of rock musicians who substantiate that same fact. What you just felt in a little way, rock musicians say, oh yeah, that's what we're doing. We're trying to do that. Rock music has such a strong beat in the wrong place, it gets bodies moving. And generally, that's not in the way that God can. I can't accept that Satan and mankind is content to just pervert the proper presentation of music or just the lyrics of music without overthrowing the proper order of music, melody, harmony, rhythm, undermining proper harmonic progression that goes somewhere and lands with rest, and without disrupting the normal rhythm of how things should be. So my question tonight is, what does your music say? Is your music in good order? Or is there something featured prominently that shouldn't be? Does your music follow established rules of music that have just a general consensus have come around those the last few hundred years and say, this is how it is? Does your music influence your body to move in ways that are just not holy? So what does your music say?